And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky here, and this is Turn the Page Day. We are turning the page, Buck. The NFL season, the Super Bowl is behind us, and the draft is in front of us.
Well, I'm really excited because this is our time. This is when we really get an opportunity to do what we've always done, which is really dig down into the draft, look at prospects, give opinions on how we think guys will play at the next level, rank them, have big boards, and really do the stuff that is perfectly in our wheelhouse. I'm really excited about it because I think you and I do this better than anybody.
Well, let me make a plug for us here real quick at the top of the show. If you're listening to this, trust me, you're going to dig what we've got coming. We have so much content lined up for you as we march towards the draft. We just want you to do us a favor. Our numbers are jumping way up. They always do this time of year. We bring on a lot of new folks. But let's spread the word. Let people know on social media. If you can, get on iTunes and leave us a review or a comment on there. And let's continue to this grow this audience. It's been growing year over year, and it's really this time of year is when it really cranks up. And we have tons of stuff we've got covered for you here. Let's just tell you what we've got on today's show. We've got Bucky's top five list by position. We're going to roll through that. Instant impact guys we think are going to step in, have an impact right away. We're going to talk about a specific position, Buck, that has a cluster of players that we kind of get a little preview, go through those. What else we got coming up today, Buck?
I mean, we have so many things. When should we take running backs? Should you take a franchise running back in the first round, or can you find them in later rounds? We also will talk about the deepest positions in the draft. And then Super Bowl MVP, Nick Foles, what kind of trade value would he have if he's on the market?
Yeah, we'll also touch on the Cleveland Browns and their bevy of picks they have in this draft. So this is a beefy show. It's going to be a beefy spring with lots of draft content coming your way. Let's start it off, though, Buck. We've got your top five list here. This is hot off the presses. I do a top 50 list. You do the top five by position list. So you've got all your needs covered. You can find that at NFL.com. What's the web? Do you know what the specific site is for your top fives?
I absolutely do not.
So
I know
do
you
some
can find
digging.
In my archive.
Well, you've got it. You tweeted it out.
I have.
And I'll retweet it. So, check
we'll put it out
at Bucky Brooks. You can get a link to this list here. Start us off with your top five quarterbacks. That's what everybody wants to know.
Everybody wants to know this, and so here's what you have to understand. And I know, like, a lot of people get confused with mock drafts and big boards and top fives and what's the difference. I will say, and I think you will back this up, like mock drafts and stuff, that's more so for the fans, the readers, or whatever. If you really want to know what we think about players, check out the big board. Check out how we rank people in top five lists. So the way this list is constructed is really how I think they're going to play within the first 2 to 3 years of their career. And so number one for me, Josh Rosen at quarterback. I have Josh Rosen first, Sam Darnold second, Baker Mayfield third, then a little bit of surprise, Lamar Jackson over Josh Allen. That's my top five. I have some guys that are right on the cut line on the bubble. But the reason I went with Josh Rosen over Sam Darnold is if we were to play a game tomorrow, the quarterback that I think is best prepared to play in probably most systems would be Josh Rosen. Just from a mechanical standpoint, I believe he's the best pure pocket passer in this draft. He can make every throw. Trajectory, timing, touch, whatever it is in a pure pro-style system, he is the guy. And I think the biggest thing that people have to determine, how does he fit within your locker room? How does he fit within your coaching staff? Do you want to coach a guy like Josh Rosen? Sam Darnold, to me, is a better fit for everybody in the league in terms of his personality, his leadership ability, his playmaking, his ability to improvise. But I think right now Josh Rosen is a little more polished, which is why I put him first as opposed to second on this list.
Look, I can't argue with that in terms of day one, what you get, and his polish as a passer. You know, the interesting thing with Rosen is going to be this keeps coming up more and more when you talk to folks around the league. The concussion thing is legit. Like, people are concerned about that. And some of the durability thing. That's a legitimate concern. As much as people talk about personality and all that, does he love football? Put that all aside. To me, the durability with him is the biggest question mark when I talk to
him. It has to be because he's seen his season end prematurely two of the last 3 years. And the last two seasons, we've seen him happen. He missed the final few games of the season this year dealing with a concussion. And then the previous year, he had the shoulder injury. So you have to factor that into the conversation. With Sam Darnold, Sam Darnold's played every snap for the last 2 years, has a bunch of games under his belt, and in spite of some of the things that people will say are flawed, we have seen him perform bright light, big stage. He's been a gamer. I think the biggest thing with Sam Darnold, I think you have to know what you're getting. Some people will say, like, he's a high-risk player. He is, but he's also going to reward you for the way that he plays. And if you're a team that can handle some of those mistakes, you're going to be rewarded for some of those spectacular plays. I love him as a player. I think he's worthy. I know people are kind of beating him up a little bit about all the turnovers. But the only way you know what you can do is you have to do it in games. And I think he is going to continue to find out what he can do, and I think he's going to be able to rein it in.
Sometimes I think – I always try and narrow things down. When you go into this evaluation process, it's easy for us to get caught up in the minutia. To me, I was thinking about this the other day, okay, because I always talk about accuracy, decision-making. Those are the crucial aspects of that position. And I thought, okay, is there a way to simplify it even more from that? And how do they move the football? How do they lead their team, and do they score points? And do they win games?
That's really it.
At the position.
If you really think about it, the way that I even boil it down, if we were playing a turkey bowl mm-hmm. on Thanksgiving, which quarterback would I want to pick and say, hey, here's the ball, I want to win at the end of the day, who is going to be the winner? I think football is really as simple as that. We can talk about the mechanics and all this other stuff or whatever, but at the end of the day, can you score points? Can you lead your team? And do you have the wherewithal when the game is on the line in a two-minute situation? Yeah. Can you make those plays? That's it. All that other stuff, how they look, size, can you play the game? That's ultimately how you need to judge the quarterbacks and really all these prospects.
And Josh Rosen had a big end-of-the-game moment, first game of the year against Texas A&M. I'm hanging my hat on Darnold because I was in the stadium when they beat Penn State in the Rose Bowl. I was in the stadium when they beat Utah coming back this year. Saw what they did against Texas. Like, I've seen him in a bunch of big moments late.
Epic
game
moments. We've seen
plays.
Him deliver. Like, that is the thing that makes it hard. And it even makes it hard for me to put Rosen over top him. The only thing, in my perspective, that gives Rosen the nod, I think he's a little cleaner in terms of how he plays. And I could see him in a system, say, for instance.
Sooner, right?
Yeah, in a system like New York. If you had to put him on the field and play, I could see him have success in that vein. But in looking at this list, if we talk about players.
How about number four? Get me to number four. That's what I want to talk about. Number four. hey, before you get to your take, because Bucky has Lamar Jackson 4, Josh Allen 5. But I want to see, did you see Lamar Jackson's tweet today?
Oh, I did not.
I retweeted it because I thought it was awesome. All right, here it is. Lamar Jackson. You can infer on who he's talking about. Just because I'm not broadcasting what I'm doing doesn't mean I'm sitting at home on my behind! !
Ooh.
Interesting. I thought that was – I retweeted it. I thought that was fantastic.
Fantastic.
I don't know, he's not from Missouri, but I think he's in that show business.
He's going to show you. So my deal with Lamar Jackson, and I feel like Lamar Jackson has kind of fallen, I don't know, under the radar, hasn't really been discussed in this. If we're talking about games and we're talking about guys who can play, there's no doubt in my mind that Lamar Jackson can play the game. Now, does he do it in a conventional manner or traditional manner? No. But there have been times where I have been in the stadium and I've watched him play against other prominent guys where I felt like Lamar Jackson was the best guy on the field. And so from a mechanical standpoint, is it always perfect? No. But I believe he has an extraordinary set of athletic skills and tools that will give him the opportunity to erase some of his mistakes. And with the right coaching, the right scheme, the right system, I think he can be a guy that can be a fantastic playmaker. Some of the issues that I saw with Lamar Jackson, I saw a little bit in Marcus Mariota, and I think they're more similar than people who give him credit in terms of Marcus Mariota has to play in a system that really plays to his game. When you take away his legs, he's not the same guy. Lamar Jackson is going to be like that. So I have seen him have dominant performances. I've seen him be the best player on a big stage. In fact, he went toe-to-toe with Deshaun Watson a year ago. He was the best player on the field, and to me, it wasn't close. And so if I think about what Deshaun Watson was able to do in the league, why would I doubt that Lamar Jackson couldn't do similar things based upon that interaction that I saw with them and how Lamar Jackson really dominated the last 2 years?
Yeah, I have him in the early 40s on my list overall. So I have him kind of in that second round range. I think he's the ideal second round pick because mm-hmm. is there risk? Absolutely. There's some risk involved, some mechanical things you got to really work through and clean up. The accuracy is not ideal. But you're talking about elite playmaking skills and the arm talent to make every throw. He can do everything.
He can do all of it.
He just got to get in line a little bit and get his footwork corrected. He's got some stuff with his release he can clean up. I don't think he's ever going to be a 65-66%
passer. I don't think so. And I think that's why I'm curious to see which guy which team eventually falls in love and takes him, because he's not going to be that guy. He's not going to be a 65, 68, 70% completion rate guy. But what he will be is a guy that can be a spectacular playmaker, a guy that can make you right when you have a bad play call. He can mask some of the deficiencies that you may have in the offensive line, and he can play in a style where he enhances what you do as a running team. I think there's value to that. You talk about the second round. The second round is actually a perfect spot for him because the expectations won't be as great as they would be if he was a first-round pick. We say that, but with quarterbacks, there's always the expectation. But I think he brings something that others don't have, and I think there is a value to that if the right coach gets a hold of him.
All right, we spent a little time there on the quarterbacks. We'll roll through quicker here on the rest of your list so we can get rolling here. We start with the running backs here, though, Buck. I know your top guy, obviously, it's obvious here, Saquon Barkley. Before we get to the rest of your running back list, though, Sully, I think we have a little clip from when we were talking to Mike Gesicki at the Senior Bowl. I had a chance to ask him about their running back there at Penn State, and it's a pretty interesting conversation. Here's a little snippet.
Honestly, you know, you can't say enough about Saquon as a player, but really as a person. I mean, he does, you know, so many great things on the field, but he's just, you know, such a great guy to talk to, an awesome teammate. I mean, you guys have seen all the videos of him power cleaning 405 and
bananas.
It's unbelievable. I mean, in the same day, I power cleaned 385 and I think I'm the man. I'm like, oh yeah, I just did 385, and then he walks in and bangs out 405, and everyone's like, all right, Mike, we'll see you later. So it's been unbelievable, you know, having him as a teammate for the past three seasons, and you can't really say enough about him.
Can he hoop?
That right there tells you he can't.
So, if you ask him, if you ask Saquon, I mean, he can do it because he's so, you know, athletically gifted. He doesn't have the greatest jump shot, but I mean, dude can jump and dunk and do all that crazy stuff. So, I'm sure if you put him in front of somebody with that kind of agility, he's probably a great defender too. So
he can't. He got no skills. He's got no skills. But he's very athletic. That's right between the lines there.
Yeah.
It's funny. What more can you say about Saquon Barkley? We've talked about him. He is the ultimate back that you want in today's game. He's a big-time runner. He's an outstanding receiver. He can give you value and big-time plays in the return game. He's physical. He does it all. And I think in today's game, when you see a Lev Bell, a Ty Gurley, a David Johnson when he's healthy, those big backs that can do everything, they rise to the top of the charts. And so, for me, I think it's easy. A team in need of a playmaker in the top five, Saquon Barkley is the guy. I think the bigger thing, and we don't need to take up all this time talking about the top five. I think the bigger thing, when you look at the rest of the list,
yep,
how many of those guys that are on this list, Darius Geis, Ronald Jones, Royce Freeman, Sonny Michel, how many of these guys can come and make the impact like a Kareem Hunt or an Alvin Kamara? Because I think that is what people are going to be looking for in this draft.
All right, I want to give the folks incentive to get on NFL.com/Bucky Brooks to read the entire list. So we won't go through the whole thing, Buck, but why don't you just go – position by position here, just give us the top two that you have, and then folks can line in NFL, or log in NFL.com/Bucky Brooks to see the rest of the list. Why don't you go through the receivers top two?
Here we go. Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk are my top two wideouts, my top two tight ends, Dallas Goedert, Hayden Hurst, South Carolina. Offensive tackles, Orlando Brown and Mike McGlinchey. That might be a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, this is
guards,
a surprise.
Quentin Nelson, Will Hernandez. Defensive ends, Bradley Chubb, Marcus Davenport. D tackles, Maurice Hurst. Vita Vey certainly gets in there. Outside linebackers, Tremaine Edmonds is a guy that everyone talks about, but I'm still holding the fort for Harold Landry from Boston College. Inside linebackers, this is easy. Roquan Smith, Rashawn Evans. Cornerbacks, Denzel Ward, a guy you talked about. And if you don't know who Mike Hughes is from Central Florida, he is a big-time prospect. And then finally, a safety, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Derwin James, two talented dudes coming into the league.
Yeah, that is a good-looking list there. All right, let's move on here. Some other topics. We got a lot to cover here today, Buck. Wrote something real quick this week. I'll hit this one quick. Instant impact rookies. Guys, I think are going to come in year one. We don't know where these guys are going to go, who's going to pick them. But I think just in terms of the polish and knowing exactly who they are and what they can do, I rattled off these five guys. Saquon, who we've already talked about. Quentin Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame, who I think could be an all-pro type player early in his career. Bradley Chubb, the most polished pass rusher coming out of NC State. I think he has an immediate impact. Vita Vea, who we just talked about from Washington, I think is a dominant run player right now, has some upside as a pass rusher. And then Christian Kirk, the fifth one, who is a defined guy. I know exactly what he is. He's going to plug in the slot day one, and much like Cooper Kupp, I think he has an immediate impact.
Right system comes in as the number three or just a slot receiver. He's going to make an immediate impact. We know how serious and diligent he is about going about his business. He's a productive playmaker who also gives you some value as a punt and kick returner. Love Christian Kirk. I think he absolutely can make an impact in the right situation.
All right. Deepest positions in this draft. Let's just get up in the clouds here and look down at this draft, kind of a first glance. Deepest positions, I scribbled down here, quarterback, running back, corner, defensive tackle. I think it's really a stellar group at those spots.
No, I absolutely agree with you. Like, if you talk about two offensive playmakers, the playmakers that you need, quarterback, you can't go wrong. And we are seeing, and we talked about this, it was going to be a renaissance of the running back position. We saw that coming when we looked at the college game a year ago. We said, man, there are plenty of backs that are talented. Then you saw the takeover with Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey, Kareem Hunt, these young guys being able to come in and go right to the top of the charts. We're going to see that continue to play out with some of these running backs that are coming in, because more and more of these running backs are not only coming in as exceptional runners, but they can do things in the passing game. In today's game, when you need to be able to move the ball through the air, your running backs may be the best way to create a mismatch over the middle of the field.
All right, so before we get to talking about the defensive side with the corners and the defensive tackles, I had written down here running back debate earlier late, kind of a little rhyme there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was having this conversation with a buddy in the league, and it was interesting because as much as we think maybe that debate's been settled, people are still entrenched on their side of the fence on this thing, Buck,
yep.
And they have evidence. So if you are take a running back early, if he's the dude guy, here's your argument. You say, okay, well, Ezekiel Elliott came in, immediately turned the Cowboys around, they got rolling. You look at Todd Gurley, what he's done, and this team last year, he's the offensive player of the year. The Rams, they're in the postseason, have a big year. Leonard Fournette steps right in, high pick. Jags in the playoffs, big difference maker. Okay, so that's the argument that you get there. Then you get the argument from the other folks, and you know exactly where I'm headed. You just talked about it. Kamara, Hunt. Every year there's these guys in the third round
where you can find them.
Every year they're there. So we're having this debate back and forth, and I'm kind of the mindset, look, I have Saquon Barkley as the best player in the draft. So I'm saying, hey, if they're good enough, take them up there. But this was the point that was brought up, which was good, because it's not just where can you find running backs. It's the cost of passing on the other positions. So what this was said to me. Defensive linemen. As much as we can see running backs second, third round, tell me where these great, consistently great edge rushers and corners are that you're going to get in the second, third rounds. So it comes back to doing our pairs. It's something we do all the time. It's a little exercise. So it's like, okay, if I need a defensive end and I need a running back, okay. Saquon Barkley. Say you take Saquon Barkley.
Love Saquon,
in the first round.
But now
you look at the pool of defensive ends.
Who's going to be left? And this is something
not great.
This is something that we talk about in the run up to the draft. When you're in meeting rooms, we have these discussions. You talk about 2x2s, 3x3s. What is an ideal haul? What is an ideal draft day for us? Well, if we can get these needs shored up and get the best that we can find in these positions, you have to do it. So that's why when we're ranking these guys and we're going through it. What teams are trying to assess, what are the shallow positions? What are the deep positions? We talked about quarterback, running back, corner, and D-tackle being deep. Well, that means that in the early rounds, maybe I can bypass one of those guys and get comparable value a little later and take advantage of one of these shallow pools, shallow positions, and see if I can get the best guy early to shore up a need that I may have.
All right, let's do a fun exercise. Look, so we'll get back to the corners and D tackles. I think we've kind of established those are the deep positions. But this kind of leads me perfectly into the Cleveland Browns as we're playing this kind of either or game.
Because
a lot of folks, and I've been one of them, have said, okay, let's say whoever your quarterback of choice is. I said Darnold, so let's just plug in Sam Darnold at one. Because if you like a quarterback enough to take him at four, you should just take him at one.
Just take him at one. Don't mess around.
So you go Darnold at one. So then we get to the four with them, the fourth overall pick. And I've been saying all along, Saquon Barkley is the dream here. But let's look at two different scenarios.
Okay.
So let's say they go Minkah Fitzpatrick at
perfect.
Four.
Yep.
Now you come back. They have 33 and 35. I think they're staring at a Sony Michel, maybe a Ronald Jones sitting there at
35. I think Ronald Jones is definitely there for them at 33.
So let's just plug him in there. So now you don't have Saquon Barkley, but you pick up Minkah Fitzpatrick, and then Ronald Jones is not Saquon Barkley. He's pretty darn good.
Pretty good.
Whatever your flavor is, if it's Ronald Jones or Sony Michel, I think both those guys are great backs.
Can't go wrong with
Or, you know, Geis. Maybe Geis is there.
And that's the thing. Like, you have three guys that can come in right away and make a play. So you either get Darius Geis or you get Sony Michel or Ronald Jones. Like, how can you go wrong when you're sitting there at the top of the second?
So then, you know, it's kind of like, okay, maybe that fourth pick – I think you kind of look in the secondary there. Maybe it is a Minkah Fitzpatrick. I think there'll be some other good corners there. I like Minkah as a free safety. I think he's just a blue-chip player. But it's a supply and demand issue that teams are going to be wrestling with in this draft. And that running back debate, as much as some of us think it's been put to bed, it's not put to bed. It's a very real thing.
It's a very real thing, particularly because what is this league called? A copycat league. So if you look at the Super Bowl, you look at how the Philadelphia Eagles deployed their running backs. Jay Ajayi.
Committee.
Fifth round pick. LeGarrette Blount was undrafted, but he probably would have been a third or fourth round pick based on his stuff. He didn't have character flaws. Corey Clement, another undrafted free agent. Then you go to the Patriots and all their guys, a bag of misfits that they cobbled together. But what you saw was a very diverse workload, a diverse set of backs, guys that could contribute in a variety of different ways, and they were able to collectively get it done. And the thing that it does, if you have kind of that running back by committee, if those guys all have similar traits, much like the New Orleans Saints running backs, Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara can do similar things, Tevin Coleman, Devontae Freeman in Atlanta, they can do similar things. I think what you're getting to, when I get one, I'm going to double down and get another back with similar skills, and I'm willing to keep a bunch of running backs because not only can I get them on the field like that, they also can play special teams.
That's the other thing. If the Browns do not want to go with a running back at one or four, shoot, they pick – look at the number of picks. 1, 4, 33, and 35. Those are early second-round picks, and then 64, 65 in the third round.
They could double down.
Six of the first 65 picks. They could take a running back at 33 and 64.
Then come back at 64.
I mean, again, John Dorsey. Well, see, people think this is crazy. This team is, what, 1-31?
1-31.
John Dorsey hit the jackpot with this
game. It was the best.
The jackpot.
It was the best job for a guy that is a football guy, a guy that loves to go about his business in the draft. And even speaking about it, when I look, it's funny because how they're forming their front office and the guys, all those guys, one, I work with. But now you have John Dorsey, you have Alonzo Highsmith, you have Elliot Wolf. They bring back Scott McLuhan to consult them on the draft. You're talking about a team that is focused on getting it right through the draft.
Oh, yeah.
One thing we know, they will get it right. They may not be perfect, but they're going to get the best player available at each of those spots. I think you're going to see a vastly different roster from the Cleveland Browns as they go into 2018.
Yeah, they are set up to succeed. Can't get worse. So they've hit the bottom, and they've got a lot of capital here, and they've got some money in free agency, which we'll get to on a later episode here, and what that free agency pool looks like. Just to kind of dabble into this draft, we've been macro. Let's get micro here just for one second, because one of the things we'll do on Path to the Draft coming up this spring, that's gonna launch on NFL Network. I believe it's right after free agency starts. I think the 19th, maybe. March 19th is when that kicks off. One of the things we do on there, we do play this game called Cluster Buster, and you look at different clusters of players in the draft and kind of how you sort through those guys. And I've just spent the last week looking at receivers and kind of going through a bunch of these receivers, Buck. And to me, one of the clusters in this draft, where it is, I don't know, probably in the second round area, you got a big wide receiver cluster that we're going to have to sort through. And that's something I'm keeping an eye on as we go forward. Simi Cobbs from Indiana, Equanimeous St. Brown from Notre Dame, Cortland Sutton from SMU, and Auden Tate from Florida State. Just four of the guys here. These are four guys, 6'3-plus, big physical guys. None of them are going to, I think, wow you on the stopwatch, but good players. That's just a clump of guys, and the odds are probably one or two of these guys are going to be really good, and the rest are gonna kind of flounder. So it's just a cluster you got to sort through.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting cluster because people have kind of roundly discussed Cortland Sutton for the majority of the fall as a first-round pick. But then when you think about some of the other guys, on tape, we've seen him have his moments at Florida State.
When healthy.
Equanimeous St. Brown, a guy who you talk about being big, fast, and physical that can make some plays. Production doesn't necessarily match the talent, but he is a big-time prospect. And so you have the ability to find that big-body playmaker that we have to have in a receiving corps. We've talked about it. Your basketball team, Brian Billick came on the show and said, look, the wide receiver corps should look like a basketball team. You need to have different sizes, different skills, different tools that you bring to the table. And so we saw with the Philadelphia Eagles, Alshon Jeffrey is that big body playmaker, the guy that can play above the rim. He can go get the alley-oops. They got them other guys that can go and make plays and run in the slot. But at some point, you need to have a fixture, a guy that can be a post-up player. And so as the league continues to evolve, that cluster has some value. Now it's trying to figure out which one of these guys comes out of a system that will set them up for success. If I'm kind of going with an early gamble, I'm thinking Auden Tate just because he has experience running real routes. He has flashed the ability to make big plays. He's intriguing to me as a prospect.
No question. And to me, I wrote down on my paper, he reminds me of what's my guy from the Panthers?
Kelvin Benjamin?
No.
Devin Funchess.
Devin Funchess. I wrote down Funchess on my paper. I'm like, there's a lot of similarities there. Funchess, second-round pick. Funchess emerges as a really, really good football player. I think Auden Tate could be that exact same guy. And you know, a team like the Bears, they need to bring in a couple wide receivers. We talked about the basketball team. We'll see in free agency. You go get some speed in free agency, then one of these big guys makes sense in the second round. If you want to go get a big guy in free agency, get somebody with a little more juice here in this wide receiver core. So that's going to be an interesting cluster, but this is something we're going to do all throughout the spring. We'll get different clusters, different positions, and we'll kind of go through them and break them down. So I just want to give the folks a little taste there.
No, that is a little taste. I think the interesting thing that we will have, the debate that we will also have coming off the heels of the draft, early or late on wide receivers. We saw three receivers last year going to top 10. None of those guys necessarily made immediate impact. All of them were injured, of course. Yeah. But we saw a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster come from the second round, have a big impact. We saw Cooper Kupp in the third round also have big value. So much like we talk about running backs, do you go early? Do you find that sweet spot somewhere in day two? I think you can make the same argument for wide receivers. And, in fact, I come from a system where in Green Bay, we talked about not expending a top pick because you could find those guys in the second and third round in that system that could succeed. It would be interesting when we dig into these guys. Are we more comfortable finding guys in the second and third round, or do we really believe some of these guys that may get first-round grades can really have the impact that equates to where they would be drafted?
You know, it's interesting because I've, you know, full disclosure, I always go back and try and figure out guys I've got right, guys I've got wrong. We play hits and misses on here all the time. One area with position where, okay, I've missed on a couple of these guys I got to get better at is wide receiver. So how do you self-evaluate? What did you miss? So I looked down Kevin White. I know he's been hurt, but still, even when we've seen him out there, he didn't look like the same guy that I thought he would be. Kevin White and then Corey Coleman, who liked his explosiveness coming out of Baylor. We joked about the fact he only ran four routes. So far, not a great return here for the Cleveland Browns where they took him in the first round. So the lessons I'm trying to learn here, what did I miss? Okay, I keep coming back to kind of route polish is important.
Yes.
So the guys running these limited route trees scares me. Just focusing on traits, size, speed, explosiveness, that's nice. You got to be able to run a variety of routes. You got to be able to separate at the top of your route. Just some of that stuff, it just puts you ahead. Cooper Kupp, for whatever deficiencies he had, speed, explosive-wise, dude can run routes. If you can run routes, catch the ball, you're going to play. At least I know where your floor is. And we can debate where your ceiling is. To me, I go back to Ozzie's philosophy. Doubles are good. You win a lot of games with doubles. Get doubles. Don't strike out. Don't strike out trying to swing for the fences. Get you a solid double. Those guys with route polish, to me, are doubles all day long that sometimes end up being more than doubles.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. The wide receiver position is definitely difficult to evaluate. And I've had this discussion with scouts in the league, and they've said the factor that really comes in is the spread offense. Because no matter where you take these guys, if you take them in the first round, you take them in the fifth round, this guy that comes from a spread offense to now having to learn how to run pro-style offenses, regardless of where he comes in at, there's a level of transition. And that first rounder isn't guaranteed to pick it up quicker than the fifth rounder, which is why we've seen more of these later, mid to later round guys have success early. So, yes, digging down and looking and trying to find and determine if a guy is a polished route runner certainly gives you an opportunity to hit a double. And as more teams go to a systematic approach, meaning they have the system in place, they're just trying to plug guys in that can run certain routes to succeed in that offense, I think there's value to having guys that are route runners as opposed to dynamic or explosive playmakers but may not have that polish.
And just one bit of advice. I know we got a lot of folks. We meet them when we go to the these events. We see them at the Senior Bowl. A lot of guys want to get into scouting. They listen to the podcast, and we're kind of their gateway into that world. Mm-hmm. So I think, look, I got to be more cognizant of that, and let's throw out some nuggets to these folks that are listening that are looking to get in the profession to try and help them out, give them some advice. To me, one of the best pieces of advice I can give guys getting into this thing is don't run from your mistakes. Look at them and learn from them.
Oh, you have to own it. You're lucky. If you're a good scout, if you are able to hit on like 50% of what you think is going to happen, you've done a really, really good job. I think you have to own it. And I think you have to also be tied to how the guy's going to play rather than when he gets picked.
Yeah.
A lot of times so much of our evaluations are tied to mock drafts and the like. It's really about how is a guy going to perform, because when we issue grades, those grades aren't arbitrary. They basically should be reflective or indicative of how we think this guy is going to play in the first 2 to 3 years of his career. And so you have to stick to that premise. And sometimes you can't pat your back or beat yourself up the first or second year. Maybe
it
takes 3 years. And I think the big example we can talk about, how about Nelson Aguilar?
Yeah.
Nelson Aguilar, we both felt very, very good about when he was a draft pick. First couple of years didn't look so good. Mm-hmm. Alshon Jeffrey comes over. He now goes to a more natural role for him. Nelson Aguilar in the Super Bowl has, what, 8 receptions, 80-something yards, looks like a big-time player. So there's a lot that goes into the evaluation. Fit and scheme is one. But you have to continue to learn and challenge yourself to figure out why some guys are able to play and some guys really can't get it done.
No question. So that's our free advice for the day. Last topic before we get out of here today, touched on it quickly. Nick Foles, you mentioned Nelson Aguilar. Nick Foles, obviously Super Bowl MVP. Fantastic. Couldn't write a better script. If you're in Hollywood, you couldn't do it. But here's the question. For the Philadelphia Eagles, A, should you trade Foles? B, what would the cost be? What would you accept?
I wouldn't trade him. If I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, man, we always talk about how this league is governed by the quarterbacks.
Yep.
How you must have quarterbacks to be able to win. So now you're the Philadelphia Eagles. You have two quarterbacks who can win games at a high level. What is the rush to get them out the door? I would try and hold on to Nick Foles as long as I can, particularly while Carson Wentz is on this cheap deal. I always am assured of having a guy that I know can get us as far as we can go. And I think, and you said this, man, you said this a while ago, Howie Roseman, that Philadelphia Eagles staff, they get it. They get it because not even this year with Foles, the previous year, they invested money in the position. They had Sam Bradford. They had Chase Daniel. Then they drafted Carson Wentz.
Yep.
Like, what is the bad thing that can ever go wrong when you have multiple quarterbacks that can play? You always can auction those guys off to get back what you need at some point. I learned it from Ron Wolf because in Green Bay, they always had multiple quarterbacks that they drafted. Every other year, they would draft a quarterback. And part of the premise was, we're going to draft him, we're going to develop him, and if there's ever a time where we need him to play, he can play. But if not, we'll sell him off and we'll get another position of need that we need. So I just think there's value to keeping multiple quarterbacks. I think Philadelphia has it right. I don't even mind overpaying for a quality backup quarterback that can play. And because he grew up in Philly's system, they know his flaws and weaknesses. He is set up to do that. And I would caution Nick Foles, be careful chasing the money. You've seen what it's like when you left the comfort of the nest.
Yep.
You can make a lot of money for a long time in Philly as opposed to going somewhere else and chasing a big short-term deal.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because, look, I think Carson's on the hook for like $6 or $7 million next year. Foles on the hook for $6 or $7 million. They don't even have that much money wrapped up in the position.
They don't. Like, they actually could be in a situation where they could do something that would be revolutionary. Maybe they make Nick Foles a $10 million backup at some point.
Yeah.
Just because he can play. We know he can play. He's whatever. He is, say he's valued as the 32nd starter in the league. And then you still can pay Carson Wentz. The trick will be, can I get Carson Wentz to take a deal that allows us to set a budget for the quarterbacks that we can still be able to get it done? Maybe that budget's $30 million. Who knows? But it'll be interesting to see how they handle this and how this plays out.
Look, I don't even think even if they got offered a late first-round pick, they would trade him right now just because the value at the position. And you don't know with Carson's health. So, to me, if you're going to trade Nick Foles, it's going to be the Garoppolo situation where you get through, hey, let's get to the trade deadline next year. Make sure if we need Carson to take a couple weeks into the earliest part of the season to make sure he's right, Nick can get us through the first couple games, we'll be fine. Eventually get Carson up and running, and then you get to the trade deadline. At that point in time, somebody wants to throw you whatever to help you make a championship run and you want to gamble a little bit, then maybe you go ahead and do that. Even then, I don't know if I would do it. I don't think Foles is going anywhere.
I don't either. I just don't see why they would. Look, Nate Sudfeld is a young quarterback. I mean, maybe if he flashes and shows that he's ready, I still can't see him doing it. There is comfort in knowing I got a Super Bowl MVP
serious insurance
as my backup quarterback. I also have great chemistry in that room. I don't need to tinker with it.
No.
Nick Foles has been fine. Nick Foles handled his responsibility, did his deal. He and Carson Wentz get along. Man, I don't know if I'm messing that up.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Look, that was a beefy show. We wanted to cover a lot of ground there as we transition towards the draft, towards the NFL offseason. I don't know about you, Buck, but I just feel a little extra energy in the pod studio today.
Oh, a little bit, because now we're able to do some of the stuff that we've always talked about doing, being able to really get after it. I'm excited about it.
And the fact that even after Tennessee wet the bed on signing day, that Sully still showed up to work. That's a professional.
Oh, man, that was a rough day yesterday, boys.
That's all right. Hey, maybe those four guys you signed will be good players. You never know.
They'll be all right. 20th in the country, 8th in the SEC. Yeah, we'll survive.
Yeah, those. What is that off, ESPN?
No, that was
How about ESPN has all
24/7 composite.
I'm watching ESPN. They send their reporters out for signing day, their national signing day coverage, and they go as far west as Texas.
Yeah, I'll nobody tell you about that.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Come on, nobody. You couldn't send somebody to USC, UCLA, Washington, Stanford, any of those places.
No,
I mean,
and SC had a pretty good day.
SC finished with the top five class, but that if a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears what really happened. We can't talk about it. All right. Anyways, that's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for downloading. And again, thanks for leaving us those reviews and comments on iTunes. We appreciate it. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Daniel Jeremiah. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.